Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2012. Lecture 15, delivered on October 17, 2012. The title of this lecture is Present Values of Complex Cash Flows.
Today, Present Values of Complex Cash Flows. This actually, part of this brings back what might be something in your past, a dark memory, of what are called Venn diagrams. Now, this isn't a Venn diagram in the classical sense, but to deal with these problems, what you're doing is essentially the same logic as you would for a Venn diagram. Let me show you something here. Now, you can do this is going to be a little bit like work, the first part, then the second part of this, where I show you how to price bonds in a bond market. That's easy. The first part of it isn't quite as easy. Look, suppose we have you will receive $5,000 for 4 years. Then you'll get $7,000 for 2 more years. Along with a bonus of $1,000 at the end of the seventh year. I'm going to get another pen here. Okay, let's write that down while I get find a darker thing to write with here. Okay. What is the present value of this mass, present value of this annuity? And this is an irregular annuity in the sense that it just doesn't have any levelness to it that stays. There are two ways that you can do a problem like this. Now, one of the ways I think you would probably use, there are two ways that you can deal with zombies, okay? You can either go through and shoot each one individually, or you can use finesse and a flamethrower across the field, and that wipes them all out at one shot, okay? Okay, so we can do this in two ways. You can do it his way, you know, one zombie at a time. But the first thing we're going to do is we're going to lay out the zombie line here. Look, here is now. And then we got 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, and 7 years. Now, I'm going to write down the cash that's going to happen on each of these years. So for the first 4 years, we're going to have, let me try another marker. That one's like mashed in. Well, I wanted something pretty, and I don't have anything pretty. Where are all my pretty markers? Oh, there. Look, $5,000. $5,000. And I'm going to write that 5,000 on the first 1, 2, 3, 4 years. And then in years, the next 5 years. Let me try 5 years there. And then for the next 2 years, we're going to have a $7,000. But then in that seventh year, we also get a bonus of $1,000. So technically on that seventh year, there's an $8,000. Now, the brute force way to get the present value of that would be to simply take each of these values back as a lump sum. The present value, so in other words, I could do this as, I better put down a discount rate. Discount cash flows at 7.5%. And we'll just do that. So I could do it this way. I could take each one of these back. So I've got this one would be $5,000 times 1 plus 0.075 to the negative first, or divided by whichever one you wanted. Add to that 5,000 times 1 plus 0.075 to the negative second, 3 years, 5,000, 1 plus 0.075 to the negative third, 4 years, this is getting to be old real fast, as you can see, 5,000 times 1 plus 0.075 to the negative fourth, 5 years, my arm's getting tired, 5,000, 1 plus 0.075 to the negative fifth, 6 years, that's 7,000 times 1 plus 0.075 to the negative six. And then in the eighth year, in the seventh year rather, I'd have 8,000 times 1 plus 0.075 to the negative seventh.
I have a question.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You know what? I actually was doing it right, and I screwed up. Okay, fine. If you want to be technically... Well, no. Ha! For 5 years. There's your... I am sorry. I thought I started to change it, and then something told me I had done 5 years. Yeah. Sorry about that. So the original problem is you will receive $5,000 for 5 years. I don't know where you got that four from.
And where's the 0.075?
0.075 is a
7.5.
That's because I wrote it down afterwards. See, I'm trying to confuse the hell out of you. Okay, now... The point here being that you can beat this thing up like this and just add all of, work out each of these, adding them up as you go along. And that's the brute force way, one zombie at a time. However, is there any other way to do it? The answer is yes. Is it a better way? The answer to that is absolutely, I don't know. You can make your choice. Let me show you what this other way entails. You see, if I were to look at this cash flow, it's actually, there is a regular annuity hidden in there. In fact, there are actually two regular annuities. Plain old, ordinary, regular annuities. If I were to look at this closely, I'd see that there's actually a 7-year $5,000 annuity embedded in here, but in the last 2 years there is a $2,000 in year six and a $3,000 in year seven. So I could actually do the present value of a 7-year, $5,000 annuity and then just haul those last two back as lump sums, what the one, 2,000, present value of a lump sum 6 years out, and then another one, the present value of a $3,000 annuity 7 years out. That probably would be a faster way to do it. If I did it that way, I'd write the present value of the 7-year annuity, 7-year, $5,000 annuity. Work that one out on the calculator on its own. And if you've got a calculator, for heaven's sakes, follow along with me. Apps, finance, TVM solver, and I'd have a 7-year annuity, discounting at 7.5%, paying $5,000 with no kicker, and I get the present value of that thing is a $26,483.01. That would take care of this piece right here. And then I'd have to remember, oh, I've got these two little pieces out there at the butt of the thing that I'm going to have to deal with too. So add to that $2,000 piece, discounted back 6 years, and add also that $3,000 piece, discounted back 7 years. So I come back out, and I would probably just do those straight up. 2,000 times 1.075 to the negative 6 is 1295.92. That takes care of that piece right there. And then that piece right there, 3,000 discounted back 7 years is $1,808.26. And then I could just add the three pieces up and I get the present value of the entire mess. So I do the 26,483.01 plus 1295.92 plus 1808. Hoping I did all my calculations. 29,587.19. Now, which way is faster? What I did here, or if I just pounded each of those out separately and then added them up? I can't tell you. I probably would be less likely to make a mistake doing it that way because I've got three calculator actions instead of what would be a total of, seven there. But it's, you can break up. If you see an unlevel cash flow like this one, which is actually quite realistic, more realistic in the real world, you look for an underlying constant one and then go back and just put in the pieces that you've had to leave out, creating the level annuity. Now, on the second exam, that would be an example, that would be a problem, just a complex cash flow. But inside it, if you look, there will be a level cash flow and then some clumps. One last thing that I want to point out about this thing. You see that $1,000 there at the end?
That shows up in project analysis quite frequently. It's what we call salvage value at the end of a project. You have a project that produces cash flow over a period of years, but then at the end there's this clump of money that would be what you would get when you sell off the equipment and finish off the project, or expense out the equipment at the end, something along that line. So that's not an unusual feature, that what you'll hear me call the kicker at the end. There's another place that's going to show up in just a minute. And that's where we go now, is to the other part of this lecture, which is actually steps you into a, if you're into that kind of thing, into a much more interesting world of investments, one part of the investment world. And to begin this, someone who would probably know the answer to this. Easy. Okay. Sean Connery was one. Pierce Brosnan was one. James Bond. We're going to do Bonds now. I know, that was so sorry-ass lame. Fine. Look, the world of bonds is a huge world. Bonds represent a long-term borrowing of money. In your lives, you will issue bonds that will be what is simplistically called the mortgage on your house. Corporations issue bonds all the time. It is the primary debt instrument of most corporations. They issue a series of bonds, and that represents a borrowing. Investors buy those bonds, and that represents the lending of the money to the corporation. Now, you can get all varieties. I can break up bonds into all different types, mortgage bonds that are secured by hard assets, specified hard assets, bonds that are unsecured, debentures, notes. Those are the things that are not quite as long in duration. But here are the characteristics of a typical corporate or government bond, somewhat different from consumer bonds in the sense that corporate and government bonds pay only their interest over the life of the loan, and then they pay off the face value at the end of the loan. We say that the loan is serviced during its life, and then it is settled at the end. And for the purposes of this course, so that we don't get into complexities of parts of years, if I say that you have a bond that is due in, let's say, 2026, assume that that's 14 years out. Now, technically, it's 13.25 years or something like that because we're in October. Don't do that. If you want to do that, you come to my next class like this, 341. But here, make them whole years because otherwise it just gets to be a pain in the ass. Okay? So when I give you the year of a bond, that's the year that it matures. That's the year that the last interest payment is made, and then the face value of the bond is paid off. Always, always, unless I say differently, the face value of the bond is $1,000. In other words, bonds are issued in multiples of $1,000. If I want to borrow $25,000, I issue 25 bonds. That's the traditional way we analyze bonds. We assume that their face value is $1,000. Now, if the price of a bond is lower than that, we say the bond is selling at a discount to par. If a bond is selling at more than $1,000, we say that it is selling at a premium to par. If the bond is selling at exactly $1,000, which is very unusual, We say it is at par. So we'll go through a few where first we're going to find the prices of bonds given some other features. Now here are the things that you need to know about a bond. I will never tell you the face value. You have to know that to start with. That is the future value, the kicker at the end of the bond. You'll have the trade symbol. That will be part of the bond quote. What is the name of this company on its exchange? You will also have, as well as the face value, you will have the coupon. That is a percentage of face value. So if I told you that the coupon was 8.6%, that would mean that this bond pays $86 a year. Know this, bonds pay semi-annually, which means that everything we do with a bond, we have to adjust to double the number of periods. So 14 years is 28 payments. $86 is $43 every payment. And whatever interest rate we put in, which is the next part, is half of that as a semi-annual rate. So the next one is going to be what we call the yield on the bond. Sometimes you'll hear it called the required rate of return, the discount rate on the bond. Typically, we call it the yield. Now, in another class, in the next class, if you were to take 341, you would hear me explain that there's a difference between the yield to maturity, which is what you're learning here, and the yield to call, which is something else. But here, yield means technically yield to maturity. In other words, what's the interest rate that this bond is representing on its way out? So, for example, CMX 7.8% 2032. YTM on it, let's say, is 7.6%. Price. We're going to find the price. The present value of the flow of the interest payments through the life of the bond, along with that last kicker payment, the face value, the principal of the loan, on the last day of the bond's life. In order to do that, the first thing that we have to say, okay, we know that that means that the payments per year are $78. We know that the number of years on this bond is 20 years. And that the I percent is 7.6. Now I want you to turn on your calculator and go to TVM Solver. Apps, Finance, TVM Solver. Trust me, this is a lot easier to do these days than it was back before we had calculators. Back in the old days, we had to keep slaves, students that were ne'er-do-wells, and force them to do calculations late into the night. We had tables, but literally we did these by hand, and it was a killer. Went for long bonds. Now, on your calculator, here's how you do this. You see that N? You're going to type key in the 20 years. And then you're going to say times 2 because there will be 2 payments a year. So with N, you times 2. Now you go down to the I percent. Now you key in 7.6 and then you divide it by 2. Don't hit equals, it'll do all that for you. Because the yield is going to be happening twice every year. So per period, it's 7.6 divided by 2, or 3.8. Now, leave the PV, the price value, alone. Go down to the payment. Now, the payment here is $78. That's per year, so you divide it by 2 to see how much each of your checks is, because you'll get 2 every year. So you take 78 divided by 2. Now, the future value is a new one, because a bond actually has that kicker. On the last day, you get one last coupon payment, and you get a check for $1,000, your principal back. So in the FV, you put $1,000. Now go back up to PV, the price value, and you say alpha solve. And if you do that, you will see 1020.40, rounded to 2 decimal places. You have priced a bond. Now, can you describe this price to me? Woman? Oh, go ahead. Oh, I love it when you talk filthy like that. Yes. Dinner later. I'll put you in my binder. Yeah. That's a net joke. That's all right. Okay. Yeah, it's selling at a premium to par. So in other words, the market's saying this is worth more than $1,000. Why is this worth more than $1,000? Could you tell me that? What is this bond paying its investors? 7.8%. What does the market say it should pay? 7.6%. So in other words, this bond gives candy. It didn't need to give it. It gives it. So when it gives candy, you reward the bond. Investors flow toward this bond because this bond is supposed to give them 7.6%. It's actually giving them more than that. So you're going to see investors move towards this bond. Demand goes up. That puts price pressure upward on the bond. So you have, I hate it when I do that, 1,020, a little bit of a premium to par. Now, here's the thing. Quote, if you were to buy this bond and you were to call your broker, okay, your broker is named Al. Al's Brokerage Service and Baptist Reading Room. I'm Al. You call me. You say, quote me on a CMX 2032 7.8%. Yeah, I can do that. My name's Al, and I deliver. Just like Pizza Hut. I almost had a pizza, but I thought, stocks, a little more money. I'd say, okay, it's 10204. 10204. You quote at a tenth of the price. I've said this early on, but I'm reiterating it now. If I say quote a bond, you put 10204. That's not a dollar, that's a quote. Because we quote at a tenth of the actual price. Now, if you don't know that, you can be surprised. I think I already mentioned the story of a guy who bought bonds for the first time. He actually thought that quote was the price. It was something like $98.12. He thought it was $98.12, and he got his account hit for $982 or $981.20. He nearly had a heart attack. What the hell is this? It was supposed to be like a $98 bond. No way. That was a quote. The price will be 10 times whatever you hear the quote. So if I tell you quote a bond, you quote me 102.04, or you simply say it 10240. Is that right? 10204. Yeah, you say 10204. Okay. So know the difference between the quote and the price. Get you a little bit more of the terminology. Okay, that's all there is to it. That's how you price bonds. Here's the problem, though, is that in the actual real world, we know the prices. We look on the ticker symbol, there's the price. What we don't know is the yield on the bond, the actual interest rate that's being charged. So let me take you on one, ADC 6.2% 2018, quoting at 92.38. Find the YTM, find the yield to maturity on the bond. Now, when I look at this, first of all, always, of course, you know the face value. It's never going to be in a quote sheet. The face value is 1,000. It's a grand, always. What I know about this bond is that it is paying $62 a year. It's due in 6 years. And its present value is $923.80. That's what I know about this bond. For God's sake, don't forget, on your calculator, put in PVs as negatives. Otherwise, you will... Okay, I said bond. What is this? Note, yeah, okay. Okay, yes, I'm really embarrassed. You're right. We call them bonds all the time, but it really is a note. You know, I mean, these are the kinds of things I say these, and then someone gets all shades of gray on me and, you know, hits me with big leather stuff. Okay. Yeah, but we say bond, but it is actually technically. This one's a note. I'll tell you something interesting about it, though. This could very well have begun its life as a bond, because it could have actually been issued like in 2004, something like this. This is secondary market activity, so I don't really know when this instrument was issued. So that's why I usually call them bonds, is because we assume that they were issued long, and it's just that there isn't much life left in them. But I see your point is well taken. Okay, now we have to find a yield to maturity. Now, here's where you can make a very simple mistake when you give an answer on a quiz or an exam. Don't make that mistake. You go back, you turn on your calculator, go apps, finance, TVM, solver. Now, we're going to go up to the N. In this case, we have 6 years, so you say 6 times 2. This time, we leave the percentage alone because we're looking for the yield to maturity. So we go down to the price value, and we key in negative 923.8. Again, don't forget to put in that negative because it's just the way calculators are. Okay, now the payment on it is $62, but I'm going to divide that into two because I get that $62 broken into two pieces semi-annual. And the future value is $1,000. Always that you can leave alone. And now we go back up to I percent and we say, alpha solve. And we get on the calculator 3.91. Leave that there. If you write that down as your answer, you will be wrong because it gave you the 6 month yield. You have to go over to the end of that number and just hit times two. Just do it that way. Don't try to do it by hand or something like that. There it is. 7.82%. The YTM on this bond is 7.82%. Now, think about what you have just found there. Was this bond selling at a premium or a discount to par? It was selling at a, and actually, this was a pretty steep discount to par. Do you see this guy? This guy is well below par, which means that the market is punishing this bond. The market is saying, your coupon sucks. you should have a coupon that is much higher than this. We're going to tell you how much higher it is. But one way or the other, I know for a fact that if any bond that's selling at a discount to par, and especially this one, that coupon is not going to be nearly enough for the yield to maturity. And that's what I see here. When I got this, I don't know whether it's right or not. Hell, I make so many mistakes, I can't believe myself sometimes. But I know, yeah, I got a 7.82%. That makes sense to me because, ow, did you hear that? Look at this. It's got like, that could give me an infection. No, it's the aluminum C, but I leaned into it, and then it held on to parts of me. 6.2% is way below the yield on this bond. No, seriously, that hurts like hell. Okay. Now, I want you to notice something here. Well, I'll tell you this, and then I'll give you some practice for the weekend. But as a bond, let me try this. As a bond approaches maturity, it's really, there's think about what happens. Suppose that a bond's coupon is terribly low compared to the yield. But if the bond is almost at maturity, that difference barely matters because the bond's about to pay its last coupon and it's $1,000. So one thing you can be sure of is that as bonds get closer to the maturity date, the difference between the price and par should narrow because there's less time for that difference to matter. Let me say that again. As bonds approach maturity, they should get closer to par, regardless of what the coupon is compared to the yield to maturity, simply because there's less and less time for the differential to matter to them, to matter to the investors. You're about to die. Okay? Now, you're starting to see dead relatives. You never did make much of out of yourself, did you? You start seeing Jesus. And then I come in from the side in your peripheral vision as your tunnel vision is starting to form. The first thing you say is, hey, you look like Jesus. I said, shut up. You have homework due next week. Does that really matter to you? Because you're starting to feel the flames of hell licking at your ass and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Does that really matter? Does it matter that you have a big project due at the beginning of next year? You have Christmas presents to buy and you haven't even been to Dollar Tree yet? It doesn't matter. All these huge things that, you know, You had all these things to do. It doesn't matter. You're about to die. So that's the whole idea here. See, as you approach par, no matter how wildly the coupon deviates from the yield, what the market says it should be, it doesn't really matter much. The bond is just going to collapse on par because any minute now, the $1,000 is going to come to you. The bond is over. Okay, so that's just it. You don't care what I'm bitching about over here. What you care about is me over here. And the angels sing, Hosanna. But you're not going there. You're going to hell. So it doesn't matter. It's cool. Now, if that doesn't get the idea in your mind, I don't know what else will. Okay, so you got that inevitability. And part of that inevitability is also that macroeconomic conditions, which move bond prices up and down, have less and less effect as bonds get shorter, closer in. But know this about bonds, is that they are what we call fixed income securities. And those are the kind that we talk about for people who are getting older, for institutional investors that don't want the wild ups and downs of stock markets. bonds are the way to go. They are the instrument of choice for certainty in the cash flow. And it's out there, way out there, long certainty, so you know you're going to get that for a lot of years. Now, there are different investment clientele. Some investors like fixed income securities for 10 to 15 years. Others want longer, 30. You got some investors want even longer, 100-year fixed on it. But the one thing that you know is that I took the Illinois State Students in Finance up last year to a brokerage house, and they were proudly declaring, well, no one's interested in the bond market anymore. It's all equities now. Well, that's not true, because there's always going to be investors, especially institutional investors, that want the long certainty of the coupon that's going to be the same just for a long, long time. And they also like the idea that it's essentially debt does have the prior claim. So even if the companies go tap city, if there's anything left, the debt holders are going to get it first. So bonds are safer than equities. So notwithstanding the declarations nowadays, bonds are dead, they'll never be dead because, for one thing, insurance companies, life insurance companies, are always going to be buying bonds. Also, so are pension funds going to always be buying bonds? They want things that are long in duration, that live for a long time, so they have that certainty. Where the danger came, where the damage and the risk comes in bonds, is when, well, obviously, of course, if the company is in trouble, the bonds can go tap city. And when companies over-leverage themselves, borrow too much, and they can get too close to a times interest earned of one, that's dangerous too. That's one of the criticisms of these vulture capital firms. And they're still around, but there's a candidate for president now who was one of the ones who did these. We're going to reorg this company. We're going to borrow tons of money to make it a new company altogether. And then we're going to move it overseas, build factories in other countries. And oh, by the way, our management fees are going to be part of the debt we lay on that caused this company to have. The danger there is that the company can just never possibly make enough money to live long after that, because it's got such an interest payment burden. So that doesn't mean that bonds are safe. Another reason bonds can be dangerous is that if you don't know what it is you're buying. See, when I get a trading symbol like this, I know damn well what the company is. I can have experts analyze it. I can take it apart myself. You can too, from what you learn in a course like this. You know where to go. Edgar filings, you look at those. You look at some of the other resources out there. I know CMX. There are bonds out there that look legitimate. They have all the quotations, but they really have extraordinary risk in them that you don't know, because they're actually sort of like an amalgamation of promises of cash flow from different resources. So, for example, student loans. You borrow money to come to this wonderful class, and you're getting your money's worth. I'll tell you that right now. Okay, maybe you're not. But by within minutes of you getting that student loan, those things are just balled up, hundreds of them, and they're put into a giant package, and then they're sold into a market as a big package. And that big package is called a Sallie Mae. It's a monstrous, huge, enormous bond that's bought by extraordinarily large money institutions, foreign countries. And so if you wanted to step into the world of Sallie Mae's, though, you're actually buying a complex instrument with lots of different risk factors in it. The same is true with mortgages. You get a mortgage at a bank. Within hours, that's packaged up with a pile of other mortgages that bank has done that day. They're shipped off. Then the brokers take those and they put those together into larger packages from many banks. And then that's not the end of it. Suddenly that giant monster bond, which represents all these miniature bonds of individuals issuing bonds to buy their homes, then they break that bond up. There's a bond that pays only the interest part of the loan payments that the individuals make. Then there's a part that pays the principal part of that. There's a new bond that's created that is for the people who prepay their mortgages before the time of maturity of them. Then there's a part for the risky mortgages, the subprime part. Suddenly, you don't know what the risk is. So if you're going to step into the world of bonds, if you step outside of the world of trading symbols that you can identify as company, you're stepping into the world of risks that may or may not be more than you can bear, and you're also stepping into risks that are hard for you to assess. And how do I know that? Because they were hard for very professionals to assess. That's why we had pension funds, trust funds, institutional investors who invested in toxic assets, bad monster bonds. They didn't know how bad they were. They couldn't analyze the internal structure of the toxic risk in them. And so we had a lot of pension funds, trust funds, investment companies, individuals, wealthy individuals, who were absolutely destroyed because they couldn't see the inside of the risk structure. When I teach you how to do bonds, I'm teaching you how to do corporate bonds, government bonds. You know what you're buying. Step outside of that world. You don't know what you're getting, and you can't, because even the best experts in the world couldn't do it. That's all I have for you. Go home.